The third lesson is from the Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus said, "For it is as if a man, going on a journey, summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them, and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, "Master, I knew you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours." But his master replied, "You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." This is the word of the Lord.
But you, beloved, are not in darkness for that day to surprise you like a thief. Paul, in his letter to the Thessalonians, compares the advent of God into our world to the break-in of a burglar. What does he mean by that? How tough she is upon us, Flannery O'Connor. And yet Flannery O'Connor says that she writes the way she does because there is this crust around us, a crust of self-delusion that she's got to break through with shock. She wrote a short story that Andy Baxter called to my attention called "The Turkey." Have you ever read it? Out playing in the woods one day, Ruller, a boy of 11, comes upon a wounded turkey that somebody else has shot. It's hopping about in the brush. And with some effort, Ruller captures the turkey. He hoists it up on his back, and he makes his way back toward town. He thinks to himself, this turkey is some kind of sign. Maybe God sent this turkey so that I could get it. It's like a gift from God. And when people see me with this huge turkey, they're going to be impressed. They're going to notice me. They're going to come out and say, "Ruller, where'd you get that big turkey?" He thinks, yeah, this is a sign from God. God doesn't want me to grow up like my older brother and go bad so he sent me this turkey. I'm special. Ruller suddenly wanted to do something for God. He thought, if I meet a poor man, I'll give him this nickel I've got in my pocket. I'll do that for God. Even his abusive father, Ruller thought, will be forced to recognize me. He will say, that is some bird you got there, Ruller. That is a turkey. He comes into town, and sure enough, people come out, stand on their porches. They say, Ruller, where'd you get that turkey? He bears it proudly, its head bobbing along as he walks into town on one of the side streets. Going towards home, a group of older boys come up to him. Ruller, where'd you get that turkey? Can we hold it? And Ruller proudly hands it over to them. In a moment, they are headed down the street, and before Ruller knows what's happening, they are gone with the turkey. And Flannery O'Connor says, he ran toward home like something dark and terrible was after him. Paul writes to the Thessalonians, don't you let God jump you like a thief in the night. God, a thief? What's going on there? Well, look at us. We build this chapel to appear about 600 years older than it really is. Everything is big and heavy. Ever notice that about church furniture? It's always heavier than it needs to be. Fixed, permanent, thick. Oh, we so long for immutability, particularly when it comes to religion. Look at us. When one of us falls, we invariably say that death was unexpected. But is it really? Last summer, close of the summer, one last afternoon at the beach before returning home and to school, went out on the porch. As the sun was setting, there were four young adults cavorting in the surf about 100 yards from us. You could hear them shouting and laughing. We did not notice when their shouts of joy turned to terrified screams. But a crowd gathered, and we looked over in the surf, and one of them was pointing down and was bobbing up and down and diving, and people waded, joined hands, waded out into the surf, and in just a moment, he came bearing the body of his friend. And he collapsed on the beach and wept. How quickly these things happen. How thin that veneer, that crust of permanence separating death from life. Oh, there are days like today when the sun shines and life appears anchored. But then how quickly there is that late night phone call, there is that x-ray with a spot upon the lungs, there is that slight burning sensation in the chest. Look at us. There will always be a tomorrow, we say. But we lie. There will always be one day when there is not a tomorrow. Life ends. We are terminal. The only permanent fact of human life is its impermanence. Oh, and how we hate, avoid, deny this. Look at us. Russian poet Isaac Babel was arrested by the Soviets in 1930. The poet was deprived of food and brutally beaten for days until at last his captors won from him the words that would seal his doom and send him to Siberia. At last they got him to sign a statement saying the worst, most traitorous thing you could say about the Soviet Union, namely that the Soviet state is, quote, temporary, relative, and unstable in nature. That was the cardinal political sin, to doubt that the Soviet state would last 1,000 years. Now, I don't know if you were here the first of last December, but if you were, we opened the church year with a story from Jesus. Jesus says, "The day of the Lord comes to you without warning, like a thief in the night." Maybe Paul was quoting Jesus when he wrote what he did to the Thessalonians. Jesus continued with a parable, but understand this. If the owner of the house had known what hour the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake. He would have not let his house be broken into. And today's epistle to the Thessalonians compares the advent of God to a thief. Paul says to the Thessalonians, don't let God jump you like a thief. By my count, 4 times in the New Testament, God is called a thief. 2 times in the book of Revelation, God says, I will come to you like a thief. Now, I dare say you may be attracted to other images of God. God the Good Shepherd, God the Waiting Father, God the Mother Hen who gathers her chicks under her wings. But God, a thief? We'd had a wonderful day in Paris. I had preached that morning in the American church in Paris, preaching in broken English. And then we had spent the afternoon exploring Versailles, the grounds, the palace, and late evening we returned to the city, and we were getting on the metro, and I felt this push at my back, and in an instant I turned around and I felt for my wallet, and it was gone. And as the metro moved out of the station, I looked and I could see the thief bounding up the steps. In one moment, he had gotten our money, our Eurail passes, the passports, the identification, everything. I'd said to the children, you give me your passports today. I don't trust you with those passports. On the way back to the hotel, one of the children said to Patsy, I thought Dad was going to cry when he realized his wallet was gone. She said, he wanted to. How do you feel when a thief has entered your life? Violated. That's the word I hear people use most often when they've been burglarized or mugged. I felt violated. That safe, secure, stable sanctuary of the home never feels quite so safe once there's been a thief. An intruder has had the gall to finger your most intimate possessions. I have seen people, after some thief has burglarized their home, I have seen people never be able really to go home again. They had to move afterwards. To this day, I feel negative if you'll say the word Paris to me. Oh, but look at us. We build this church bigger, heavier than it has to be. We take out insurance. I'm squirreling away money not to be spent till 20, 30 years from now. I'm holding on tight. There's a guard at the door. There's an electronic security fence surrounding us. But then there's the thief. The thief. And how different the world looks after the thief. The thief is a grim reminder of a truth I am reluctant to face. Who am I kidding? The stuff, the life, it all hangs by a fragile thread. The loved ones I cluster so securely about me are but temporary residents here, as am I. The things I accumulate and hoard and insure and secure, oh, they are depreciating and decaying and devaluing even as I speak. Thus, Psalm 90 says, we're like grass. We're like grass which flourishes in the morning, but the sun comes out, by evening it fades and withers. Or, as Paul put it, be enlightened. Don't let God catch you like a thief in the night. Now, there are more attractive, appealing images of God, I'll grant you, but few more truthful, and maybe few more life-giving than this. How is it possible for our first hymn, Words of St. Francis, how is it possible to speak of death as a sister? I think God is determined to have us. If you're looking for some coherent theme running through the Bible, I think you can take that as one. God is going to have us. Much of my holding and grasping and accumulating is evasion. I want to secure my life on my terms. And maybe sometimes there's no way for God to get to us except to just take us, steal us. And God will have us. Is that good news or bad? Is that threat or promise? She held up her arthritic hands to me and she said, look at this. God took my job, my main source of pride and income. I haven't painted in the last 2 years. And I said, what kind of theology is that? God didn't cause this arthritis. You don't believe God gave you arthritis so you could be closer to God, do you? She said, well, I'm not a theologian. All I know is it worked. C.S. Lewis once said, I wonder if people who are always praying to God to intervene in our world really know what they're asking. Would they like to be there when God really does intervene? God, the thief. Well, I'll let a New Englander, a woman more genteel than Flannery O'Connor, but no less honest, I'll let her have the last word. Miss Dickinson of Amherst. I never lost as much but twice, and that was in the sod. Twice have I stood a beggar before the door of God. Angels twice descending reimbursed my store. Burglar, banker, father. I'm poor once more. Did she call God burglar?